regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with my friend Mike Sedini from Walk the Talk America here in just a moment or two. As we get into the holiday season, you know, it is a challenging time for a lot of folks in terms of it's a great time for a lot of folks, but it can also be a challenge, particularly when it comes to our mental health. And Walk the Talk America, you know, their whole mission is about helping to ensure the mental health of gun owners and to do it without imposing all kinds of legislative remedies. So we'll talk with Mike Sedini about that. We've also got our Armed Citizen Report, our Good Deed of the Day, and our Recidivist Report as well for you coming up later on in the program. And I will, at the end of the show, give you another TMI update on what's going on with Miss E. So stick around for that if you are so inclined. But right now, let's get to it. The latest from Walk the Talk America and Mike Sedini doing some great stuff out there. And get ready to head into the lion's den, as a matter of fact, in just a couple of weeks. Take a look and a listen. Mike, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again, my friend.
Yeah, likewise, Cam. It's always good to see you.
You know, so when originally I asked you to come on the show this week, I kind of thought, you know, we're heading into the holiday season. I know that this is a tough time for a lot of folks, right? Because you get older, you know, you're a kid, man, you look forward to Christmas and you look forward to Thanksgiving. And as you get older, you know, these holidays are often tinged with sadness and painful memories. We know that this is a time of year where, you know, self-harm and mental health struggles can really kind of increase. So I originally just kind of wanted to have you on to talk about, you know, what gun owners can be doing, what we should be looking for with our friends and our family members this time of year to help those who might be struggling, and the resources that Walk the Talk America provides. So I want to start there, but I do have a couple of other things I want to talk with you about while you're here.
Yeah, absolutely. Holidays can be tough, right? The older we get, the more we experience loss, then the holidays come up and we start thinking about the times we spent with those people. Then there's a financial component, a lot of stress. You know, we try to provide presents for kids, presents for everybody, a lot of coordinating, a lot of difference of opinions, you know, having family at the table, especially coming off an election. Holidays are going to be pretty interesting this year. But, you know, one of the things I think that we all need to be, and it just goes with gun ownership, is mindful of these things, right? And preparing for these things. And, you know, not to try to always plug a Walk the Talk America program or something like that, but that is exactly why we created the Mental Health Plan, which is a free resource on our website for gun owners, to plan ahead for things. We like to plan ahead, so we're not catching you when you're at your wit's end. You're actually prepared for this before, when you're mentally healthy and you feel good, and you know, continue that, as opposed to let's wait till you are, you know, about to throw a turkey through a window. You know, I'm making light of it. I'm not, but it's the way I cope. But you know, holidays can be tough. So we have to be mindful of our firearms. We have to be mindful of the people around the house that may have access to those firearms. It's super important.
Absolutely. And so, you know, what is Walk the Talk America? I'm sure that most of our audience is familiar with what you do. But again, what is Walk the Talk America? What purpose does it serve again in helping those folks before they get to a crisis, and hopefully to prevent a crisis point from being reached?
I think where we come into play is being a couple ways. One is being the trusted messenger, right? Everybody that's involved in this this organization is from the firearms industry. All of us make our living from the firearms industry. We are the first ever homegrown, I would say, organization from the industry to tackle the mental health issue. There were suicide prevention programs before. You know, we've seen those here and there sporadically, but we were the first ones to say, it's not just suicide prevention. It's about maintaining your mental health as a gun owner and understanding that guns and mental health aren't mutually exclusive and they can go together. So I feel like what we do is kind of spark the brain, right? Like we're not going to change the world, but we're going to spark the brain for the gun owner to say like, oh, I never really thought about that. Or I've never heard anybody say that to me that's actually from the gun industry. It's always come from behavioral health or people that don't understand us. That's why we work with so many different like little programs or little like PSAs that gun owners can appreciate. You know, like we recommend, hey, you're feeling stressed out, go put some lead on target. You know, like there is no mental health organization that's going to tell you that, right? We know that they're going to be, that's a taboo for us. It's like, hey, feeling off target, get out there, put some lead on target, like things like that, that gun owners can appreciate. So I think that that's where we play a really vital role. And I'm going to start three things, right? Those first two. And then the third one is, I feel like we kind of give some hope to gun owners that they could be part of the mental health conversation and not have to feel dirty about it at all. Just, you know, we look for solutions.
That yeah. Type of thing. Well, and I'm glad that you talk about that, because I think this is, you know, so there's the outside stigma about mental health just in general. Right. But then there is also, I think, that concern and that fear among a lot of gun owners that, okay, if I, and again, let's take self-harm out of this. Let's just talk about a stressful situation and the life stressors, right? If I reach out for help, if I want to talk to a counselor, if I even want to talk to my doctor about what's going on, am I going to get red flagged, right? Am I all of a sudden going to be seen as a danger? Am I going to be seen as a threat by these folks? And so I think a lot of it sounds like really is destigmatizing mental health treatment and mental health care, right? Just like preventative physical health, making this a conversation that gun owners can have, but gun owners feel comfortable having with people in those spaces without having to legitimately worry about how their rights are going to be impacted, right?
Exactly. And then take the advocacy piece that, you know, at least gun owners know that we're out there explaining or educating, I would say, the behavioral health side to these fears as well, right? Like, think about, we have the cultural competence course for mental health clinicians. I just told you before we went on air, I've been on the road for a month and a half. I spoke at two conventions that had nothing to do with firearms that were strictly mental health, behavioral health conventions. And it's really fascinating to make people see their blind spots, right? Like when we talk about red flag laws and I go up in front of a crowd and I say, well, in the world I come from, red flag laws get people killed, right? And then everyone's like, wait, what did he just say? Because red flag laws are in place to save people. And then I explain to them how many people don't get help because of red flag laws and how it becomes a barrier to entry. And you see the crowd literally shift. Like they're like, wait, why? And then I say, because people don't want to lose their gun rights. And, you know, I always do the whole thing where I say, if I had a dollar for everybody that contacts Walk the Talk America on a weekly basis and says, I want to get help, but I'm afraid to, I wouldn't have to ask you people for money. And then I follow that up with, how many people don't contact us? Right. And like, that's what we're, and then people go, oh my God, I didn't think about it that way. No one's ever put it that way to make me see that this law could be a barrier to entry for someone to get help when they're at stage one, not stage four.
Yeah. And this isn't just a hypothetical. I mean, one of the stories I actually wrote right before we started talking today, the sheriff in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, I don't know if you have been aware of this, Mike, but he has this process or this policy where he is denying concealed carry permits to anybody who has ever sought treatment for alcohol or drug abuse. So if you went to an AA meeting 30 years ago, you can't get a concealed carry license now. And a lot of these folks are challenging these denials. They're winning in court. I think several dozen cases have been overturned. But again, I mean, you want to talk about a barrier to entry. You've got the chief law enforcement officer in Charlotte, North Carolina, saying, hey, you know what? Hide your abuse. Right. Hide your struggles. Don't go get help, because if you get help, I'm going to know about it. But if you don't, man, how about I got to find out? Right. Y'all, you probably pass a background check. I'll probably give you your permit. Now, he's not specifically saying that, but that is, I mean, that's the takeaway here. Right. You're going to get punished if you try to deal with your issues and you try to deal with your help or deal with the, you know, the problems that you're facing.
Yeah. And you don't want to do that, right? People shouldn't have to wear, take guns out of it.
Yeah.
Take guns out of it. Like, let's just talk about mental health. People shouldn't have to wear a Scarlet A on their chest the rest of their life just because they did something when they were younger, when they weren't, you know, fully developed or hadn't had some real life experiences, or maybe had struggled and gone into crisis at a time and maybe turned to the bottle, right? But they don't do that anymore. It shouldn't follow you around the rest of your life. And it's just, you know, it's a shame. It's a shame that people don't see it that way. But I mean, that's kind of what why I do what I do, right? Like that's the fuel that drives me, you know, to challenge these beliefs and kind of be counterintuitive to most people to say, like, you can't do it. And if I wouldn't have made the relationship with the people that are on the mental health side, I couldn't call this stuff out and say, like, hey, this is wrong. You better go do something. Just because guns are involved in this one doesn't mean you should sit on the sideline. You got to fight because it's just flat out wrong. You know what I mean? And we as gun owners shouldn't be denied anything, whether that's mental health help or our Second Amendment right, just because we went through crisis 30 years ago. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and it's a shame. And, you know, it's not even a matter of 30 years ago. It can be 3 years ago, right? It can be right. even Six now. Months, I mean, right, listen, you know, I will give you a perfect example of this. And I will be open with my own experience because I want people to understand that this is normal, right? So I think everybody in the audience knows that my wife's dealing with lung cancer. This has been a very stressful 8 years now. And probably like 2 years ago when I went in for my physical, I was talking to my doctor and, you know, I said, yeah, you know, I get stressed on occasion. Just because he said, well, I don't blame you, right? You have a very stressful situation. So he said, you know, do you want, he offered me an anti-anxiety drug. He offered me an antidepressant. And I said, you know, I don't want to do both. I said, let's start with an antidepressant and just see how that works. So I took it for about 3 months. I didn't really notice any improvements. I just stopped. You know, I've got a good support network of friends that I can reach out to and talk to, and it really wasn't that bad. But then I went back in August for my most recent physical, and I told him, you know, I said, yeah, it didn't really work for me. He said, well, you know, what about the anti-anxiety drug? And I said, okay, let's do that. Because there are days, you know, when just the weight of the world can be overwhelming. So I got prescribed an anti-anxiety drug that I take as needed, which is, I don't know, maybe once every week and a half or so. I just get to the point where I'm like, yeah, I just need to just not feeling great right now, you know. And that's normal. Again, I mean, we just talked about it at the beginning of the show, you know, as you get older, we get scars, man. And sometimes we get raw, gaping wounds, you know, that we have to deal with. But to think that me reaching out to my doctor and just telling him what's going on in my life, I have trust in my doctor. We have a pretty good relationship. So I wasn't worried about that doctor turning around and then saying, okay, you know what, Cam, you're a gun owner. You've just admitted that, you know, you're stressed out. Sometimes you get anxious. Well, I don't feel comfortable with you having guns in your home. So I'm going to invoke Virginia's extreme risk protection order. I didn't feel like that was going to happen. But if I didn't have that relationship with my doctor, would I have been open about this? Would I have felt comfortable saying, hey, here's what's going on in my life, and is there anything we can do? I don't know that I would have, Mike, honestly, you know, and that's my concern, is that, you know, I turned 50 this year, so I am now in that age and demographic and geographical location where, you know, listen, older white guys in rural America, our suicide rates are horrifically high, right? Yeah. And so this is something that I've thought a lot about, not just for me, but for my friends that I have, for my neighbors. It's an issue that really does concern me. And again, when I see things like Sheriff McFadden in Mecklenburg County, or again, the push to use these red flag laws as often as possible, even when the vast majority of cases, they can't say, okay, well, we know that we prevented a suicide. We know that we prevented a crime. They just say, well, nothing bad happened, so therefore it must work, right? That's not the metric that I want to use. I think in many ways we are going about this backwards. And I think that's one of the reasons why I like what Walk the Talk does, is because, you know, it takes the legislative side out of it, right? And it's all about that individual human connection and what can we do to to make people to help people help themselves and to help people manage their mental health, just as we manage our physical health.
Yeah, well, if you're going to love this, because this is a perfect segue into what I'm doing next month. I am literally going to be in Seattle. I'm going to be the first firearms industry professional invited to speak at the Gun Violence Prevention Research Conference in Seattle, December, I think it's December 9th to the 12th. I'm going up there. I'm actually presenting, which is really cool. And I'm going to be on a panel as well. And I got to see some of the questions that they're going to ask. And one of the things I'm going to push for is more research going towards how many people don't get help because of this fear. Like, that's going to be my number one thing that I'm going to tell that sea of researchers out there. And I heard there's a ton of them. I talked to somebody yesterday that told me about the conference. Some brilliant minds. I'm going to say, we need to do more research on how many people are not getting help or are afraid to get help, gun owners, and put the emphasis there as opposed to putting research on how many lives did our red flag law so-called, you know, save, right? Like, it's got to go the other way as well.
Absolutely. I mean, the statistic that I always see is for every 19 or 20 red flag petitions, one life is saved. And that's that. Listen, I'm glad that one life is saved. But let's talk about the other 19 cases here. Right. So were those individuals who needed to have their guns taken away? Were those individuals who harmed themselves after their guns were taken away? Because I think, you know, again, and you and I have talked about this before, Mike, to me, the issue isn't gun involved suicides, right? The issue is self-harm. The issue is somebody taking their life. I don't want anybody to lose their life by any means. I not just, you know, take the gun out of it and all of a sudden they use a rope or pills or whatever. That to me is not a success story. And I think for those who have that, you know, myopic focus on the gun, maybe that is a success story. I would like to think that's not the case, but maybe it is. So I'm curious to see how your presentation will go next month. And I'd love to have you back on actually after you get back from Seattle to maybe give us an after action report.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm really excited about this one. I really feel like some good things could come out of it because I feel like we got to get there. Like you said, we got to figure out how many people are harmed by these laws and we got to find out what the goal is. Is the goal to reduce suicide or is the goal to get guns out of the house? Like if I can get them to admit that, there's a start, because I don't feel like taking someone's property and walking away and being like, I hope you get better soon, guy. You know what I mean? And then leaving. Yeah. It is doing any job. That person still has their car. They have all their knives. They have the rope. They're still not right. They're still not in a good way. It's not like you've given them any, hey, this is what you should do to get better. You know, there's no advice given in these things. It's a police officer coming and saying, let me take the thing that you use to protect your family with and yourself and that, you know, symbolizes freedom to you away and walk out the door and be like, good luck out there.
Right.
You know,
yeah. That's problem right. solved. Right. Yeah. And yeah, I'm with you. I don't get how somebody can, you know, a judge can deem somebody to be dangerous, take their guns away, and then think that the problem has been solved. Well, the person who's a danger to themselves or others is still there, right? And these red flag laws, I can't think of one that involves a mental health evaluation beforehand. Maine's yellow flag law does. And I can't think of any that offer any sort of mental health treatment after somebody has been deemed to be a danger to themselves or others. As you say, they take the guns and then you're on your own, right? The state's job is done. And the problem is solved. So, again, I'm really looking forward to hearing what happens there in Seattle as you kind of walk into the lion's den, Mike. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, and I just want to tell one story because I feel like sometimes we get caught up in the negative stuff. There is hope, right? I was just speaking at PTAC in Seattle. So I got to go back there. And basically PTAC is a convention full of social workers and police officers. So it was a really interesting split of the dynamics of the crowd, right? But when I got up to speak and I was co-presenting with Mental Health America and basically our our speech or our presentation was about two worlds coming together to work together to find solutions. And I started off, you know, looking at the crowd and then just basically saying, hey, like, here's the things we do. And I put this card up, which is the free and anonymous mental health screening, which Ruger and, you know, Bursa and High Point, all those companies put in the boxes of their guns. And the audience clapped. It was the first time I'd ever gotten that reaction. I keep in mind, like, half of the audience is social workers. Most of them are anti-gun. And I wish I was like, damn it, of course we're not filming this. But it was the first, you know, just me saying that the gun industry was doing something to these people created that clapping, you know, and it became, you know, infectious. Like the whole, I was like, wow. So, you know, there are some positive things going on. We just got to get the word out there. We got to be out there more.
Absolutely. Well, listen, you've got a microphone and a platform anytime you want it. And if folks are going to be at SHOT Show, I know that you'll have your booth there. I'd encourage folks to stop by, right?
We won't have a booth this year. I'm going to be walking around.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, if you want to meet me at SHOT Show, just get a hold of me beforehand. I love chit-chatting about this stuff. But yeah, it's better for us to be on the move, talking to the manufacturers, getting more companies involved than it is for us to be stationary, just because we are a 501c3. It is tough to always have people manning the booth. It has nothing to do with us being in trouble. We're going to be here forever, but it's more or less just being mobile and being able to do media and things like that, I think, is the better strategy for us. You know, we did the booth thing for many years, and we're just going to pivot and change it up this year.
Nice. Well, and I mean, let's be honest here. If you don't have to spend money on the booth, that's more money that can go to the programs, right? So
100%.
There you go. All right. Well, listen, man, I hope that you have a very happy Thanksgiving and a Merry Christmas if we don't talk to you before then. But yeah, let's have you back after you get back from Seattle. I'd love to continue the conversation.
Okay. So happy Thanksgiving to you too. And then we will talk before Christmas, because like I said, it's at the beginning of December. So yeah, I'm excited to come back on and let your listeners know what happened.
Fantastic. And in the meantime, WTTA.org, that is the website for Walk the Talk America. Again, you can get that free mental health screening. Just and again, it's not about this isn't about the government knowing the results or anything, right? This is just about personal empowerment, empowering you as a gun owner to be in charge of your mental health and to understand, you know, where you are at that point, right?
Yep. See where you're at. That's it. You can be perfectly healthy. Just make sure you're there and see where you're at if you're curious, right? You can use it as do it once a month. Just check in on yourself.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, listen, Mike, thanks again for all that you do, and safe travels. We'll talk to you here in a few weeks.
All right. Thank you, Cam. I really appreciate you.
Well, right back at you, Mike. Mike Cedini joins from Walk the Talk America here on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My thanks to Mike for joining me on the program. And yeah, you know, again, just personally, if you are struggling with stuff, with anything, please, listen, I understand the concerns about the stigma is real, but please don't let that stop you from reaching out and talking to somebody if you need to. Doesn't have to be even a mental health professional, just a friend, a family member, somebody that you think will lend an ear. Sometimes that's all that's needed. And I hope that you've got that. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there. A case out of Minnesota. It's such a bizarre story. Here's the headline. Man gets jail and probation for wounding a teenage girl in a St. Paul shooting. Jail and probation. 25-year-old Arlanders Marshall pleaded guilty back in September to second-degree assault with a dangerous weapon, as well as possession of a firearm and ammunition by a person prohibited because of a violent crime conviction. So keep in mind that if prosecutors in St. Paul had kicked this case up to the U.S. Attorney's Office, Marshall could have been eligible for up to 10 years in prison just on the violent felon in possession of a firearm charge. But instead, they kept the case local, and Marshall walked away with what amounts to a slap on the wrist, just under a year in jail and 5 years probation for shooting a 15-year-old girl in the foot during a fight at a St. Paul park last summer. The victim's mom told police that back on July 13th, her daughter was shot. It was apparently a fight at a park there. The mom said that Marshall's girlfriend had recently gone to court on a robbery charge and learned from police reports that the victim's mom had actually spoken to police. The mother was also charged in that case. The mom said the girlfriend was upset, gave some other girls some pepper spray, who then used it on the mom's children the night before. The mother and the woman, quote, had words on Snapchat after that. The Pioneer Press reports that the mom told police that she, along with her 15-year-old daughter and other family members, were at Roy Wilkins Park. When they were near their car, she said another vehicle pulled up. Marshall and two women got out, yelling about the previous robbery that had taken place. The girlfriend apparently punched the mom with a hard-covered lighter and then pepper sprayed both the mom and her daughter. The mom said that she then saw Marshall's girlfriend hand a gun to Marshall, who shot at them multiple times. The woman's daughter yelled that she had been shot. The group drove away. Officers found 14 shell casings at the scene. The vehicle belonging to the mom and her daughter had four bullet holes in the hood. A search of Marshall's office, or rather apartment, turned up ammunition with the same stamp as the spent casings collected at the scene. Police did not find a firearm. And location data from a cell phone connected to Marshall placed the phone in the area of the shooting. Now, Marshall's girlfriend also faced the same charges that he did, but they were dismissed back in August. An attorney, prosecutor's office spokesman explained that DA's office didn't think that they could prove the case against her based on the evidence. At Marshall's sentencing, Ramsey County Judge Deanne Hilgers granted downward departures from state sentencing guidelines on both counts, staying a five-year prison term on the assault charge and a three-year sentence on the gun charge. She gave Marshall instead a 360-day jail sentence on both counts and gave Marshall 120 days credit for the time that he has spent in custody. So with time off for good behavior, Marshall's going to be out here in just a few months after being convicted of being a violent felon who shot a 15-year-old girl. I guess this is what passes for justice in Tim Walz's Minnesota. I don't get it, but Arlander's Marshall, the beneficiary of one heck of a plea deal there in St. Paul, Minnesota. Today's Armed Citizen story from Lakewood, I believe this was Lakewood, Washington, where a convenience store owner was wounded in a gunfight with several would-be robbers, according to authorities. It was about 11:15 Wednesday morning, broad daylight. Officers dispatched reports of gunshots at the McCord Mart in Lakewood. This reports that the store's owner had been shot. The owner was in the parking lot when officers arrived with a gunshot wound to the leg. Officers provided medical aid until he was taken to a local hospital. Thankfully, the wound not expected to be life-threatening. According to police, three individuals entered the store, another one waiting outside. One of the three individuals who came into the store then tried to steal some items. The owner confronted them, and then one of the three guys apparently struck the store owner with a can before running out of the store. The owner followed them out, but according to police, shots were fired. They haven't said who fired first, which could matter in terms of potential charges against the store owner. If he followed them outside and then shot at them when they were not displaying an immediate threat to his life, that could put the store owner in legal jeopardy. But the owner was not arrested, which suggests anyway that he was fired upon and then acted in self-defense. The four suspects found and detained within 40 minutes, two juveniles, as well as two adult men detained. But again, the store owner not detained at the moment, not facing any charges at the moment. We'll keep our eyes open for any further developments and bring them to you as they become available. Finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A Wisconsin man from the town of Muckwanago, I'm probably not pronouncing that right, saving a life while running the Chicago Marathon not long ago. Brian Barries is the hero in question. He is a nurse, usually works at the Waukesha Memorial Hospital, Mukwonago, but he was there in Chicago. He's been a marathon runner for more than a decade. He runs the Bank of America Chicago Marathon nearly every year to raise money for the Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago in honor of his son, Kieran. Brian said that Kieran had a life-saving surgery at 5 days old. And this year, in addition to raising money, he said that he was hoping to run the marathon in a time that would qualify him to compete in the Boston Marathon. He was on pace to do it. So it was kind of in a rhythm. Now I was running. Everything felt good. But just after mile 21, he said there was a woman running not 10 yards in front of me who collapsed. And he said, I immediately ran to her. She didn't have a pulse. She wasn't breathing. So Brian started CPR immediately, along with the help of a bystander who saw what was going on. Now, in doing so, Brian probably blew his chances of getting to the Boston Marathon, at least based on his time, because he ended up performing CPR on the woman for 45 minutes before the fire department could get her off of the course into the hospital. And Brian says that he was worried she wasn't going to make it. But she did. She did. As a matter of fact, Brian Barries got to meet Maria Sutton last night in Chicago. Maria did suffer a heart attack while she was running. The organizers of the marathon said, we are deeply appreciative of the quick actions of Brian, first responders, and others on the course who provided aid. Brian Barries says that this was God's way, that this race, you're going to run. So this was going to happen. Fate intervened with me being there. I was meant to be there for her. He hopes that he'll still be able to qualify for the Boston Marathon. I would like to think that the Boston Marathon organizers would provide an exemption for Mr. Barries, but even if not, I think he has already proven himself to be a big, big winner there. So Brian Barries in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing for a stranger in need. We thank you for your very good deed. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Gaming Company. Well, wait, I did promise a TMI update. So the good news is, just literally before I started taping today's show, I got a text from my wife. It looks like she's going to be able to come home from the hospital today. So thank you to everybody for all your thoughts and prayers. We are still in the thick of it, and I think we've got some challenges ahead. But, I cannot thank you enough for your support and the love that you've shown both myself and Miss E. It means a great deal. So thank you again. We'll be back on Monday with another edition of Bearing Arms Gaming. Actually, no, we won't. I just remembered. I'm going to be off next week. Regularly scheduled time off this time around. No emergency. So we will not see you next Monday. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com. Tom Knighton, John Petrolino, Ranjit Singh, and the gang will be holding down the fort while I am gone. I will be back in a little more than a week, and I'm looking forward to spending some time with you again. But until then, hope that you have a very happy Thanksgiving. And for those, again, for whom the holiday is not necessarily a happy time, please know that there is support out there. There are friendly voices who are willing to listen. You are not alone. You are loved. You are appreciated. And we want you here. So I look forward to seeing you again very, very soon. Until then, you know the drill, right? Be well. Be safe. And be free.